Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 920. Let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard straight away. This is one of the very exciting parts of the intro where we reach out to you, the Nerdist community, to promote things that maybe you have going on, because you got stuff. Like, for instance, Lexotron on Reddit writes, "This year I decided, and my wife encouraged me, to do a thing after thinking about it for 10 years. Make a real feature film. Valerie," is the name of the film, is full of drama, motorcycle, suspense, action, comedy, action, and action. It's got a largely female cast with a strong female protagonist. After mob boss Victor's daughter, Linda, goes missing, he puts biker gang member Valerie on the case. When she discovers the reason for Linda's disappearance, Valerie must go up against her motorcycle gang, Linda's husband, Bernie, and the entire mob in order to set things right. Since we're in Canada," this goes on, "since we're in Canada and it's really hard to ride motorcycles in the snow, we went into production early October without any funding or budget. We've since launched an Indiegogo page to help cover our costs and compensate our absolutely amazing cast and crew for their time and dedication. I cannot stress this enough. Our team is fucking great. If you'd like to support independent film or just interested in seeing a pretty kick-ass movie next year, swing by valeriefilm.com. Even if you can't back us financially, it'd be super awesome if you could follow the project on Indiegogo to help spread the awareness." Very good. This also comes from Johnny Nash, who says, "I'm associated with a comedy club called Rhino Comedy, of which was recently just opened up by a teacher in our area in Suffern, New York. We do improv shows once a month. I have open mics every Saturday and do improv drop-ins every Sunday. We're trying to expand. You can learn more at rhinocomedy.com. This is us doing a thing, and we hope you can help us with our thing." Well done, Johnny Nash. And you too, Nerdist community. Whatever it is, you can do your thing. Do your thing. Come on. And then we'll promote it, and other people know about your thing. I'll be like, "Oh my God, I do a thing. I can't believe all I did was just a fucking thing." And you'll be like, "It's so easy. I didn't even know that I could do a thing too, but I'm doing the thing. I'm in it now. Am I enjoying it? I don't know. Do I have to get to a goal before I enjoy the thing, or do I just need to enjoy the thing while it's happening? Do I need to enjoy my burrito," you might say. I hope you understood most of those words, because I fucking didn't. Will you tell me what I said, please, later? This episode is Dana Gould and Janet Varney, two people whom I adore. Dana I've known since like 1991. Dana is sort of one of the godfather voices of the alternative comedy movement in terms of like influence. I think a lot of stuff traces, there's like a couple people like Dana and Bill Hicks, and you know, there's like a few people that you can sort of trace and see kind of where their voices ended up and how they were expressed through certain comics that you love now. I got a whole chart I can bore you with. And also Janet Varney, one of my favorite people in the world. I adore Janet. She is brilliant, talented, so fucking funny. One of the funniest human beings I know. And it was really, really great to have her on. They are promoting Stand Against Evil, which Dana writes and showruns, and Janet is a star of. It's Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on IFC and IFC.com. Please support the show. I love these people, and I love that they are making the show, and I want you to love it and support it so they can make more of the show. And also, Janet not only was voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra, but also produces one of the three co-producers of SF Sketchfest, creator and producer, co-creator and co-producer of SF Sketchfest, probably the best independent comedy festival. I'm going to say even like the best comedy festival in the United States. Every January into February, go to sfsketchfest.com. Can't say enough good things about Janet Varney. So here they are in the episode. And also, I'm posting this the day after Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving in 2017, unless you're listening to this in a time capsule, as you found some weird media, as you're drifting to Mars in the year 2119, knowing that you can probably never go back to Earth. But by that time, there's probably like pools and rec centers there and arcades. And so I bid you a fond journey from the distant past or the absolute present for the Nerdist Podcast number 920. Katie, please roll the thing now.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey,
The only part of King Kong I don't believe is I believe the gorilla, I believe the dinosaurs. I don't believe it when the producer goes, "We'll be millionaires, boys. I'll share it with all of you."
Whoa. What do you mean when they're like, "We're going to take the gorilla back to Broadway"?
Yeah.
And he's going to be a star.
There's a guy, there's a makeup artist. I don't know his name. He's a friend of a friend. And we were at some nerd dinner one night, and he goes, "They bring King Kong to New York. They open up the curtains, and there he is. And they take photos, and he smashes the chains and escapes. And he goes, if he didn't escape, what was the show?"
They hadn't really thought it through.
Now Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Yeah. It's really true. You really kind of opened with the conclusion.
You know, but entertainment, audiences back then were a lot more patient for things. I think one of the funniest things I'd ever heard at Largo, in the old Largo, because I never heard anyone say this before, was Bob Odenkirk just systematically shitting on vaudeville. Because he was like, he was the first one who was like, "It was the stupidest for the dumbest people." Like, he just went through, and the way he broke it down, I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess it probably wasn't that great." You know, like if you just like a typical vaudeville show now, you're like, "What am I watching?"
It must be something about that family, because Bill would do this thing all the time. He goes, and he would get really mad. He goes, "You know what I wish?" The Simpsons would be at the table just like this. "You know what I wish? Somebody should write a book about growing up in Brooklyn in the 50s, because I have no fucking idea what that must have been like." Jesus.
I just need the audience to know that Dana did the space work of getting up from the table and leaving.
Yeah, that's right.
"Tell me about a fucking egg cream again."
While shouting to himself.
Yeah.
While shouting to himself. But you do, you tend to enjoy gorilla based things.
I have a wheelhouse.
Yeah. King Kong, Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. My therapist could tell you why, but we're not going to get into that.
We don't really need to understand. I know it's fun to watch
an animal. This is not a time for tears.
I know it's fun to watch an animal peel fruit with its feet, but I don't understand. Yeah.
Are they that so far behind us, really?
I mean, I think instead of Us Magazine doing celebrities, they're so like us, it should just be chimps.
Yeah.
They're so like us.
Well, especially now that you find out, like, dolphins masturbate and things like that. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are. They're just like us.
I wonder if dolphins are thinking about anything while they're masturbating, or they're just looking at a sea anemone, just all gurgly,
you hear a whale song, and then you translate it. It's like, okay, we're on a train, and you're a dolphin, you're a dolphin. I don't know.
Wow. I'm sorry. Did that whale just ask, "Are you close"?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, exactly
tonally, if I was hitting the right. Great.
I'm so glad you picked up on that. And the dolphin goes. And then the whale repeats the last part again.
Right, uh-huh. Because the whale doesn't entirely understand dolphin, because dolphins always sound like they're going, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." Uh-huh. Yeah. So they don't really...
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah, sure, see? Yeah, I'm going to come real close. I am, yeah, sure, see? It's just a cloud.
Oh, cloud. No.
That's why they swim so fast. They have to swim away from their own cum clouds, so no one... Yeah. Can blame it on them.
The cum clouds, by the way, at the Roxy all
they're
week.
They're great. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're touring with the opening for Butthole Surfers.
Yeah.
Thank you for the Stand Against Evil lunchbox that you brought, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. We cheaped out. No thermos.
No? Oh, man. That's all right.
You know, is there ever a child that puts soup in a thermos?
Yeah, you just put it right in your lunchbox. Everyone knows
that. You just put the soup in there.
Kids
drizzle
love
it
soup.
Right into your lunchbox. Yeah, they...
That is the saddest thing to have in your lunchbox for some reason.
Yeah, soup. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's functional, but not exciting.
No. Not at all.
Not exciting.
Cup. That terrible plastic cup.
Is John McGinley related to Ted McGinley in any way?
I can only hope. He is friends of a... He is second cousin of a guy I've known for a long time. Billy Cunningham.
Is related to Ted McGinley?
John McGinley.
To John McGinley.
Is.
Ted McGinley, of course, is the actor who'd famously...
Soap?
Well, no, he that's Ted Wass.
Oh, right, you're right.
Who was
right.
on Blossom.
Love Boat, right, yeah.
And Ted McGinley was the guy who would always come in as a sexy man character to freshen up a show, like in their fifth or sixth season. Like, he came on to Happy Days. He came
oh,
on to,
I know.
He came
mean.
On
yeah,
to Married
right,
with Children.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
He was in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Marcy. That was like Marcy's
that
hot
That was Marcy's hot husband. After they got rid of
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah.
Then
Revenge of the Nerds, which time is not kind to.
No, that movie does not. There are themes in that film
yeah,
that
yeah.
Where
couple scenes in Animal House time isn't.
You're
kind
like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's best to not go back a lot yeah. of the time because comedy really does like have the context of. Oh, at the time, like, people yeah, made like, these kinds of...
It's like a bowl of tuna fish.
But it's
right on the day.
Comedy
right
is,
on the day.
Comedy is 100%
Can we leave
tuna fish.
The whale and dolphin masturbating thing behind and
again,
move
I
on
like
from
to,
tuna fish?
Like
well,
the
now the dolphin's theme. Jerking off to the tuna bowl.
Yeah, yeah. the chicken tuna. Of the sea.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that'd be very exotic for a dolphin. Is
choking the chicken of
yeah,
the sea.
Yeah, yeah. We did it.
How much money did we raise? I forget.
We're at negative $1,000.
I forget which charity, probably for the best.
Took all their money back. Yeah. Like gave it all yeah. back.
I'm saying to someone now that Hugh Hefner passed, I will never see a withered chicken neck ejaculate dust again and not think of Hugh Hefner. Like somewhere, you know, there's an 18-year-old girl who was his girlfriend when he died, and she's just trying to get over it, but she's turning on the television.
Yep.
But it's Halloween, so it's just the mummy and Dracula. It's like, God, he's everywhere I look.
See, and I can't stop thinking about a mother dolphin who's walked in on her son dolphin just as he's ejaculating to a bowl of tuna and then hearing, sorry, Charlie. Like, that's what I'm having a hard time. That's what I'm having a hard time with. Which translates to, you don't knock. And she's like, but there's no doors.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't have hands.
My just apropos of nothing, my friend was in an airport and heard like a woman in French yelling at her kid. And the kid was going, oui.
Désolé. Désolé. There was some... There's a movie that I was going to ask you about that just came out, and it's called... it's a James Whale movie.
Of Gods and Monsters?
I can't...
Nope.
His last name is Whale? Come on.
Yeah.
This
wow.
is so... I can't... Oh, I don't want any more sea creatures.
Janet,
I'm done.
Janet
Change
picks
his
her battles.
Name to yeah, something was, else.
Janet picks her battles. James
it,
Dolphin.
They,
thank you,
Mr.
Thank
Blowhole.
You.
Yes,
thank you.
We named it that way on purpose. But
isn't
James,
that an old soul song, Mr. Blowhole.
This movie is called like it and
it just came out.
It just came out, and I don't know if it's a movie that didn't come out before or was remastered or something. But I just saw it on iTunes, and I started watching it, and it's listed as a horror comedy, but it wasn't particularly funny. James Whale movie, and I know of Gods and Monsters
yeah.
is the like
the biopic.
The biopic. Yeah. Fuck, what is it called? Katie, will you look that up? It just came out and it's on iTunes, and it's called like.
Did he?
But it might not be
it
new.
He
it might,
directed
it's
it.
Older,
it's very
just,
old.
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah, he's dead.
And I think Boris Karloff. I think Boris.
The Old Dark House. Is a horror comedy that he directed.
What is it called?
The Old Dark House.
The Old Dark House. Yes.
Yeah. That's been around.
So,
yeah.
But it just remastered
it or something. But
so, can you explain yeah. to me what the comedy part of that movie is?
Well, it was an attempt to. It seems to be Arsenic and Old Lace, just like a different version of it.
Right.
It was like a Spooks R Us. Like I think it was remade by Hope and Crosby in the '40s as like. Catch That Ghost or something like that.
Gotcha.
It's pretty sweaty. It would be the.
I think Gloria Stewart is in it
yeah,
too.
She is,
yeah,
she is in it. Yeah, she's in it.
Yeah, I mean it's
a whale of a good time.
Hey, there you go.
I'm good with it. I made peace with it.
Janet,
it's a movie, but what you're saying is it's a story yeah. without a porpoise.
Hey, yes, yeah. exactly. It doesn't. yeah, exactly. And then
it's pretty sweaty.
Yeah,
I love
it.
Like
it is
that.
Very sweaty.
That's great.
It is very sweaty.
That guy looks like Boris Karloff.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like a drunken. Manservant who
yes.
just starts attacking people.
Yeah.
And so all the characters are very extreme.
It's, you know, it's funny. It's rare that a movie from the 30s is basically remade in a much better way 50 years later. But you know what that movie basically is, but it's a great movie, is Clue.
Oh,
there you go.
Kind of.
Yeah. And Clue is great. Clue. And I've only just seen it.
Oh, yeah.
You oh, really? Yeah.
And it's so good.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
They got, and there's another one where they got away with a lot of jokes in that movie that you're like, well, I was surprised the game company allowed some of the, because there's some very adult humor in there.
I think that was, I know that John Landis was involved in that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of those where he's just, no, we're going to do it.
And the multiple endings was really fun, too.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
The multiple endings
it's was really, really, really fun great too. Movie.
How are you, Varnes?
I'm good.
Do you have the, you know, we don't, Janet and I live blocks from each other, but I think we're going to miss the Halloween walk
because
I don't think it hits our street.
And our house is like the nexus.
The fucking collection.
It is. It really is. That's where everyone stops.
The hard,
where all the parents
hard candy
stop.
Center?
It is the hard candy
to start,
center.
To start a new theme?
Her house is the intersection
the
of like five streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the convergence. So that's when they block the streets off. And so that area is sort of like everyone lingers in the middle section.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and they come up and yeah,
that's
we
a hard
really
neighborhood
have
to
stock to
trick or treat
up.
In.
Yeah, no, it's a whole guided thing. They set up cones.
Parents set up stations to make sure that the cars
they're
are
like,
going slowly.
Yeah, their parents perfect. Like waving flashlights. It's actually quite bureaucratic. It really takes
I'm
all the
terrified.
Fun out of it.
I'm terrified of driving through on Halloween night always. I'm so like half a mile an hour. I'm just terrified that some
you're
kid's going to
hit
jump
a child.
Out.
Yeah.
Well, not that I noticed that the potential last game of the World Series is on Halloween night. And
it's so funny. That's the thing I care about the most.
Next door, the least. Yeah,
human sports. Will there be points accrued in the sports game?
Yeah. Yes. That's
I hope
exactly.
People get things in the points box machine.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's almost as if a gorilla moved next to a baseball diamond.
My ears get
I'm not interested anymore. Is this gorilla playing baseball? Because then you got me.
That I would watch. If one team had a gorilla,
but
they could randomly attack members of the other team, or if you could run the bases with a hot iron.
Yeah.
To jab at the
but
guy trying
but,
to get
but you see
out.
Like the second baseman go to catch a ball and it's actually just a handful of shit. He just catches it in his mitt. I mean, not to upset any people who are baseball fans, particularly Dodgers fans, but I will kind of be relieved if LA doesn't win because Los Angeles does not know how to celebrate wins in a safe way.
Yeah.
No,
and
not
so
in a safe way. No.
If it were the type of thing where LA had won and it were Halloween, that's fucking city apocalypse.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
a bad combo.
Motherfuckers like shoot off guns and start set things on fire and flip cars.
Yeah. And then all the Dodgers fans will also be celebrating, much like the children,
exactly.
The Halloween children you just described.
Yeah. But it would be like a Halloween. Depending on if you don't live in the city, it would probably be perfect because there would be a Halloween hellscape for all of the trick-or-treaters to walk through.
It's worse in Boston when the Celtics win. It's just as good. But there's this strange thing that like they have to ask people, please don't shoot at clouds. when did that become a big, please don't. And they did that during the hurricane. And
you can't tell me to stop shooting at a cloud.
Yeah. Please don't shoot the cloud.
You can't stop me.
Hey, cloud's an asshole. Why did I shoot the cloud? Because he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot it. You can't stop me from shooting the cloud.
My friend in the late 70s was at the 4th of July fireworks on the Boston Esplanade, and he said after every single explosion, the guy behind him went to his friend, check it out, Star Wars.
Wow.
Check it out, Star Wars. Check it out, Star Wars.
Someone needs to sample that and put it into a song that is mixed with the bass track from the Imperial March, is what needs to happen.
Check it out, Star Wars.
Check it out, Star Wars. So how's it going? What are you up to? You're in Sketchfest mode now.
I'm in Sketchfest mode, and then our show premieres.
Stand Against Evil.
So we've been doing a bunch of stuff for that.
Yep. November 1st on IFC. On IFC.
Yeah, but it's been good. I mean, Sketchfest is it's very consuming. It's consumptive. It's like consumption. Yeah. I have consumption.
You and Joni Mitchell have the same thing, whatever it is.
Oh, she has the thing of like, I have bugs under my skin, huh?
Oh, is that what it is?
You know that, what's that called? It's a specific, like the argument is, most people say like it's only in your head, and then there's a group of people not connected
that's
to each other, but
song.
Who are like
you're a poetry spiders.
That's right. Yeah, it's like a very specific thing where there's an argument as to whether or not there could be any...
Put bugs under the mask.
A lot of people say she was inviting it.
The paradise, put bugs under my skin.
It must be. Now, listen, this is way too close. Formication?
Formication.
That seems... So for her, she's in Malibu, so I guess it's Californication. It's a medical term for a sensation that exactly resembles that of small insects crawling on or under the skin. It's one specific form of a set of sensations known as paresthesias.
Oh, yes.
That's the word I've heard, which also include the more common prickling, tingling sensation known as pins and needles.
But I would imagine kicking that up a notch to bugs and spiders is probably endlessly unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, just if you imagine... Yeah. If you felt sure that you had something crawling under your skin, that would be...
Did she
you could go crazy.
A lot of drugs when she...
That's a good question. I honestly don't know. I don't know. She certainly was running with that crowd.
Well, because I just know, if people don't know, Janet Varney is an amazing singer and a guitar player. And I wish she would sing more because her voice is amazing.
Which I did not know until I heard her sing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. She used to fucking sing in coffee houses and shit when she was in her 20s and worship Joni Mitchell. So,
But the song I heard you sing sent my jaw rocketing to the floor like a Tex Avery coyote was Love Removal Machine.
No, it was She Sells Sanctuary.
Same thing. It's the same song. I think I'm pretty sure it's
They're pretty close.
It might be the same song.
Yeah. But, no, it was She Sells Sanctuary, which is not even an...
it's a warm-up. It's a verbal warm-up.
It's a tongue twister in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. It's amazing. It's truly amazing. I cannot sing. I don't even like to pretend to sing.
Do you still sing at all, ever?
I mean, I sing for like Thrilling Adventure Hour stuff when we do. Occasionally, we'll do stuff like that. I'm trying to think. I feel like I sang something not that long ago, but I can't remember what it was. So that's not good. That's not a good sign if you think it's recent and don't know what it is.
Love Removal Machine may be impossible to sing that song without pointing to the audience. It would be interesting to see if you could
tie your hands down.
Yeah, if you could sing Love Removal Machine and not go. Love removal.
You break your own arm to get it out just so you can flap it at the audience because you can't.
Flap it.
Janet and Kit Pongetti sang as there used to be a duo called Fempire, which was great because they wrote a couple great fucking songs. But you guys.
I make amazing Kit Pongetti.
She'd appreciate that.
She would appreciate that.
We're saying that like she passed away. She's alive and well.
Yeah. But they did a great cover at UCB one night of Dog and Butterfly, the Heart song, the song The Heart.
That was a real good cover. About that.
But I almost kind of feel like maybe we should close this episode later with a Fempire track.
Oh, okay.
You got to drop in
Me and My Vagina. That's still out there, and that's a weird. There's a weird crossover of Cora fans who found that on. I think there might be like that. Someone might have taken some Cora like
footage,
lip flaps, and put that song to it.
The Cora flaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, we're all just walking past.
Let's stride on by.
After all the fish puns.
Yeah, I'm not even going to make eye contact with
just let that one walk around.
I'm at the end of the exit ramp and I'm just waiting for the light to turn green and I'm just going to pretend to fiddle with my radio until I can.
No, that joke now from the other side of the street is like, really? Nothing? Yep, that's right. We're letting
that joke
it go.
Is going to shame you on social media. Exactly. I want you to be aware of that.
Really disappointed, Dana. Really disappointed.
That's where we take out our grievances now.
That's what we do. But Cora is done. Do they ever talk about more Cora?
Well, they do because I was kind of hoping that just slid under the pinched closed lip smile.
I was kind of hoping that just slid under the door.
Dark Horse does these comics now, and so they have me do events where like we'll read from the comics and we'll do stuff with the fans. But yeah, I don't think. I mean, they always only ever wanted it to be four books for. Seasons, so we did the four seasons, and then
because it was always based on the Alan Alda film Four Seasons.
It was always based on the band.
But I was going for the band.
If Alan Alda could airbend, that was the initial pitch.
Mm-hmm. I now summon thee.
Oh, that's old.
Yeah.
There's another show that does not age well.
MASH?
MASH does not age well.
Doesn't?
No.
I haven't seen it in quite a while.
No, it's a little too tied to the zeitgeisty.
Right.
Bell bottoms.
Gotcha.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Do you want some more bad food? Of course I do. War is terrible.
Right. Yeah.
There is something very satisfying about watching period piece movies that were shot in other periods that aren't now. And seeing, this was supposed to be set in, 1920, but it was shot in the 70s, so everyone still has giant collars.
Yeah, and sideburns, huge mutton chop sideburns.
They refused to actually be legit. They couldn't. They were like, well, we still need to be stylish.
Huge lapels.
We still need to have bell bottoms.
We had a couple over the other night, two ladies, and we watched Christine.
Uh-huh.
And some of the stuff in there was real not great.
That's about 83?
83. I think it was 83. And there were a lot of...
Worked at the drive-in that year.
There were a lot of, look at her. She's a walking sperm bank. And we're like... They're funny. They were really cool about it. But at the end,
it's one of those things. It's like... And this was only a couple... This is 20 years ago, as I heard.
Well, that was 35 years ago almost now. Yeah. So it's... But you really do... It's so interesting to watch with 2017. Eyes to watch stuff and be like, "What are they?"
I have specials by stand up with giant bits that I could not do today.
Yeah, that you
because the giants will object. the giant community is very sensitive.
FIFO, fuck you,
fuck you.
That would have been the George Carlin. You know what, I hate giants. You know what I say? FIFA, fuck you.
And then
a brilliant bit deconstructing the Bible. And you think, why did he waste his time with the giants thing? That was the maddening thing. This incredible bit, like he'd deconstruct the Bible and it would just leave you on the floor. And then it'd be, you know what, I hate farting into balloons. Well, who does that?
They've built kingdoms in the clouds, yet they have to crawl down a vine. They can't... Make a stairway. Weird.
Well, it is. That's why it can be very dangerous to deconstruct old comedy. Sometimes I think it's like maybe you can look back and go, society as a whole did not have acceptable views, but it wasn't. It just at the time.
Peter Sellers' entire career is cultural appropriation.
I mean, yeah.
His entire career
yes.
is unacceptable.
I mean, the only thing that holds up is Mickey Rooney and Breakfast at Tiffany's.
That's the only thing.
No, because people love that.
And I think people only like that movie because of that horrible song.
Moon River?
No.
Wait, is it?
And I said, what about Breakfast at Tiffany's?
People hate that movie.
Angry that you just reminded me that song
it exists.
They will say, I've got nothing in common.
The studio's big note on Moon River was, we love the movie, hate that, get rid of the song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, big genius. But then you look at when you watch it, it's about a character that I'm waiting as Hollywood continues to be subjected to awareness-a-palooza on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
One character that as the father of four daughters, three daughters, and my girlfriend has a daughter, I'm tired of the lovable, well-adjusted, but down-on-her-luck girl who becomes a hooker.
Right.
You know how many people that has happened to? None.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the affable slave. And I'm a slave. And then I think I might go into investing. I don't know. Right now, I'm going to be a slave.
It kind of makes you look back at Pretty Woman and go, I don't know.
No, I thought that at the time.
Yeah.
It's like, isn't there a scene where her other hooker friend is a big teddy bear? And just,
well, I think there was
on princess phones.
I think there was supposed to be a scene. Wasn't the original movie darker? It was called $3,000.
Yeah.
And I think the friend dies in the original version of the movie, and it's really fucked up.
Yeah.
And then Gary, I think, you know, well, Gary Marshall was like, let's make it a fun hooker movie.
Let's make it a night.
Yeah.
Well, if you redo that and you just put Harvey Weinstein, you CGI him over Richard Gere, that's a much
better story. It's
a much more realistic story that people don't want to see.
Do you remember? I'm sure you remember this. It's your career when you did.
Don't be so sure.
When did you know you know how to sing?
Janet was on a show called On the Lot, which was basically like American Idol, but for filmmakers.
Yeah.
And so Gary Marshall. And Carrie Fisher was in that too.
He was a judge. She was a judge.
And we always used to make fun of him. Janet and I used to date. I don't know if anyone knows that, but just because I'm going to reference things, people are going
to
go, why do you
know
that?
That is a coincidence. You and I used to date.
Jane and I used to date too. That's why we're all here. And we always used to make fun of Gary Marshall would start sentences with, my sister Penny.
My sister Penny.
My sister my Penny.
My sister Penny. He always seems like he was chewing on something while he said it, but the there was scenery? Nothing in his mouth. It must have been that.
He had a book, and we, for some reason, it was lying around one office I was working in, and he was like, here's how I saved $5,000 on Happy Days. They were deliberating. I'm doing Gilbert Gottfried for some reason. They're deliberating. Richie was on a jury. And they didn't want to build a jury set, so they just had them walk into Arnold's and just started to see what Richie was going. They're painting the jury room, so we're deliberating at Arnold's.
Also, wait, I can't believe there was a plot of him serving on a jury. That seems really...
Yeah, you can. And it was terrible because that's a guilty man was sent to the gas chamber. It was a very special Happy Days.
Are
it was a very special
me?
And no, it was an innocent man.
I was willing to believe that.
It was when Styx Cunningham was framed for a murder he didn't commit and was later killed.
Oh, good. It was one of those.
Wasn't that his name, Styx?
Which one?
When the African American drummer for the band came.
Well, his name wouldn't have been Cunningham.
But I think he pretended he was Richie's brother. Something terrible.
Oh, something crazy?
Yeah.
Is Cunningham one of the...
The past version of nobody in Happy Days after season 3 had 50s centric haircuts.
Oh, yeah.
Scott Baio just had a shag.
Yeah.
No guy
exactly.
had a shag. That guy in the 1950s got his head stove in with a pipe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
was that the trial? That was the trial that he was having to deliver it.
I remember watching Happy Days, and yet I can't, and I remember worshiping Fonzie.
Yeah.
But I can't exactly remember what it was that I liked about the show.
In reality, he's a terribly tragic character, Fonzie. I mean, he's this guy. He's what's his name in Dazed and Confused? He's the guy that never moved on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Never grew up. Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's just still there.
Probably like 28, still dating high school girls.
Yeah, and Fonzie's...
But he had an office.
It was a bathroom, Janet. His office was a toilet.
His big thing was telling younger men to meet him in the toilet.
It was his desk was a toilet. His to-do list was poop and a shitter.
Everybody loves
Fonzie. He needed a desk. I got to be honest with you. I think it's probably okay that he just had a shitter.
And we're making fun of him. Not to make fun of Henry Winkler.
No, because he's
the best person ever.
Yeah. He's wonderful.
He's one of those people that you meet and you're like, you can move in with me if you want.
Oh, God. I worship him. That man is a doll.
I had to slap him on the face for an episode of Children's Hospital, and I was so upset about it. He was like, just slap me. It's okay, just slap me. I was like, no, we'll do like a fake thing. He's like, just slap me. So I slapped him. And it felt so weird and wrong.
You were literally just hitting the Fonz.
I was.
Yeah.
I was. And then I was like, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done it. Guys, the Fonz couldn't say he was wrong about anything.
He couldn't say he was wrong. Yeah, and he couldn't say
love.
That was actually the wrong joke rewritten for a later season.
That was it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And Happy Days is the origin of the, you know, a lot of the children don't know, and I don't want to, you know, prepare to have your mind. You might, if you're driving, you might want to pull over. Happy Days is the origin of the phrase jump the shark. It was the
because Fonzie jumps over the shark.
Quite literally jumped the shark. Why? Because Evel Knievel was popular at the time.
And they wanted to do something.
There's another aspect. The 70s was such a bizarre era. Like, Evel Knievel was this guy that used to dress up in fancy clothes and kill himself every 4 months. And you'd watch.
Well, and it was a big television event. But going back to Jumping the Shark, there is a subsection of Jumping the Shark devoted to Ted McGinley. The idea being that when he is introduced on the show, that it may jump a shark. And what show did he come on in the last season or two?
Happy Days.
Oh, yeah. McGinley curse.
Yeah, it continues. He was the Cousin Oliver of Happy Days.
He kind of was.
Not to shit on Ted McGinley if he's watching the show. Listen, he got some good
That's
jobs.
That's a good gig.
Trying to make a living. He's trying to make
That's
a living.
Good
nothing wrong with that.
He's a ham and egger.
He's a... I don't know what that is.
A working job. Guy, and a ham and egger.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask.
That's
is,
a Bruce Campbell
is,
expression.
Is what the when you look at certain like origin, like the origin of names that are like, you know, the cobbler, like the shoemaker, like sure. Bob Shoemaker.
Right.
Is
right.
What is Cunningham? Like, is Cunningham like he's a clever, hilarious guy?
He's a clever
or,
pig.
Yeah, a clever pig.
Yeah.
Cunningham.
Cunningham, yeah.
We got to go to the bottom of this.
Company Siemens. It's a big advertising firm. It's a big investment house. It's on, if you listen to me, brought to you by Siemens. If yeah. Siemens is so good, who left the meeting going, okay, Siemens, what we call that?
That's someone's last name, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I, Dick Siemens, it's demand that this company be named
Where'd you
after
go?
Me.
Ball State.
Taint Vassar. Yeah. Hey, come on.
I hear that you've been made a very lucrative offer by Jismans, but we'd like you to stay
we'd
here.
We'd like you to stay at Siemens. Jismans.
I'm Mel Jisman of the Siemens Investment House.
This is basically just the whole what the whole podcast is going to
exactly.
be.
But, you know, all those names. Smith, if you were a Smith, you were a blacksmith.
Yeah.
That's what the origin of that name. Miller, you were you worked in the mill.
And that's why I want to know
Barney,
what Cunningham
so
is.
So your family lineage is the Jim Varney.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. We created Jim Varney. He was an automaton.
Poked your head into people's windows
that
and said, hey, Varney.
Do you remember
that
you did tell people for a while that you were related to Jim Varney?
I only told one person. It was a very close friend of mine in high school who was so incredibly sweet and just charming and delightful and also gullible enough to believe that Jim Varney was my uncle. And so I told her just stories about my dad and Uncle Jim. And she kind of never believed, like she was never willing to fully commit because she was right to not trust me.
Yeah.
And then finally I took her home. One, this is something, by the way, I think a sociopath would do. So that was like my one day of being a sociopath where I was like, you know what? If you don't believe me, just come to my house. I have pictures of my dad and my Uncle Jim together. And she was like, okay, I will. And I was like, okay, let's go, with zero plan whatsoever of how that was going to work.
You didn't know she was going to keep calling you
I
up.
I just went with it. And
I see you walking past your house. I live somewhere around here.
I can't, if I could remember. No, I went and like found some old photo albums of my dad's. And again, just like feelingless, like I'm just going to do this. Like, I don't remember any feeling one way or the other. That's why I'm saying it was sociopathic, because I just remember being like, this is either going to work or it's not, and flipped through and then found a picture of my dad with someone that kind of looked like him. That's so amazing. I was like, there you go. And she goes, oh, that is Jim Varney.
Now, did you feel
shame
at all?
I've never felt since. It was so, what a gift. What a relief. I can't even tell you.
What is?
Oh.
I was, you're talking about like the origin of, you don't know, is Varney French?
Yeah, it's French. It's like they flip the A and the E.
Right. But you don't know what it means? Is it a verb in French?
No, it's like there's a like a Chateau de Vernet in the north part of France. I
was talking to a very famous actress that was staunch, like did not, like that's a myth, that Smith does not come from blacksmith and Miller does not come from Miller. It was Agnes Moorehead. We were talking about that.
Boy, what is that last name?
I know, I was going to say, there's some, she probably has some deeply emotional reason based on her own. Yeah. Yeah. Because hers like means like field toilet.
Does it?
I don't know. Moorehead?
Sounds like Moorehead.
Yeah.
Sounds like something you'd hear at a specialty bar.
And her husband's like, that, but the last name doesn't check out.
I can tell you what it told
me. You stop that, Bob.
Yeah, her last name should be Agnes Bitchin' in the Kitchen. That's what it should be.
Okay, I'll get out of here.
My dad's...
Just give me more money to spend.
My dad's loving nickname for my mom was Dog Meat. Hey, Dog Meat, what's going on out in the kitchen?
Are
what?
You... Oh, no, why am I ever surprised? I should never be surprised knowing what I know about your upbringing.
No one in my family is aware of the concept of a podcast, so I can tell you that. I was talking to my mother yesterday, and you know, you call up. I'm a grown man.
Although all the recent jizz jokes would suggest otherwise, but continue.
Yeah, fair point.
I am chronologically advanced.
Yes,
and you know, like, hey, the show's gonna premiere season two, and I'm, you know, I'm just a
well, your sister,
who works in animal control in Connecticut. She is the only one they will call now to break up a dog fight. She is the only one that will go.
What are you supposed
to say? Or if it's 2 a.m. and there's a cat in the road or something, they call your sister.
What are they? What are you supposed to say to that?
I don't. It's apparently it's a cause for great celebration.
Well, I guess my comedy special isn't thing I've worked for 30 years on.
But I do imagine my sister pulling up to a dogfight, going, "What is this really about?
Aww.
How did this start?
Yeah,
let's all just."
Sir, and then you go right into cop speak. Sir, at this time,
step it back.
At this time, sir, I'm going to ask you to step back, sir, at this time.
Do not appreciate your bark right now. I'm going to have to ask you to tone it down just a little bit.
That's good de-escalating, guys. I think that a lot of cops could take a lesson from
really
that approach.
What are we fighting about here?
What's really going on? Sir, I'm going to ask you right now at this time to back away.
Yeah. I need to ask the Staffordshire Terrier to take a step back, please.
Oh, my God. You know what this is reminding me of? What? I don't know if this is going
to... I'm going to ask him to sit. Be a good boy. Please, I'm asking the Staffordshire to please be a good boy right now. Please.
Sir, you're not being a good boy.
Sir, you're not being a good boy right now. That's
are you a bad
problem.
Boy? Are you a bad boy?
You
is that what this is?
You seem to be a bad boy at this moment.
We both stepped on Jim.
Oh, I don't even think I'm making a mistake by telling the story, but.
I'm listening.
I was in San Francisco fairly recently and coming back to my hotel in Japantown.
The world is a jungle, Janet.
Okay, well, I'm learning a lot by telling the story. We heard sirens. We heard some sort of a screaming sound that did get louder as we got closer to the Hotel Japantown area. But it was like Steve Martin, like picture Steve Martin trying to alert his friends in the Three Amigos in that falsetto, like up here. It was a non-female voice in falsetto, just screaming, "Water! Water! Water!" And these firefighters had pulled up and they had encircled whoever this person was so we couldn't see. And all the firefighters were laughing. They were trying so hard not to laugh. But they were just like, now hold, water! Water! It was so weird.
Oh my God.
It was so weird. I don't know what it was. I can't get the bottom of it.
You sound like Martin Prince. Well, that sounds very much like Martin Prince.
It was not unlike that. I mean, if one of you guys wants to do it, I'll tell you.
Water! Like that guy?
Water! Make it more like shrill.
Well, there was a fire and the person needed water.
There absolutely was no fire anywhere in sight.
The person just wanted water.
I don't know if they were dehydrated. Yeah, they were just, that's what they were just, and they were on the ground.
Oh, thank you very much. And then they walk off.
I mean, I wish.
That's the trick.
I never got to the bottom of it.
There we go.
My friends, Tom Kenny and Paul Kozlowski, and people might know these people, moved to San Francisco in the mid 80s to be stand-ups. And Kevin Meaney, the late great Kevin Meaney from Boston, was visiting them.
Those are big boy pants.
Yeah. Brilliant comedian. And they lived they didn't know the city. They lived at 14th and Castro. They had no idea.
Oh, right.
They just got this apartment. And which is the heart of the area of not straight people. And one day Danny was just outside getting the paper or something, and he just heard this crazy guy going, "Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny." And he's like, "What the fuck? Jimmy Johnny, Jimmy Johnny." And he looked around and he walked to the corner, and it was Meanie just standing in the corner pretending to be a crazy person. And Danny and Kevin saw Danny and just burst out laughing, like, "Got me." I'm pretending to be a crazy person.
Oh, he wasn't for them. He was just doing it
for himself.
What?
Oh, just doing really it for himself. Funny. That's really funny.
And they said, like, again, you have to, like, talk about, like, fighting stereotypes. This is mid-1980s. These three naive straight guys move into the nexus of the San Francisco gay culture.
So far, sounds like the plot of Full House.
Their first day in the neighborhood, they see a guy fighting with his boyfriend, hitting him with a flute case. screaming, "What goes around comes around, you'll get yours." You're not helping.
What a great time it must have been to be there in San Francisco for comedy at that time. I mean, San Francisco is amazing place to do comedy now.
Yes.
But back then, I'll bet it was incredible.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I have a great story I can tell you when we're done.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, it's just it's such a literate city, and it's a city where people.
It had two full-time stand-up comedy newspapers.
Oh my God.
It did?
Yes. It had,
I didn't know that.
It had Just for Laughs and then another, like the Haha, like these fan newspapers. And you'd go on the Alex Bennett show, which is a local radio show, and you had a little star, you had a little fandom. Like you would. It was great. It was actually kneecapping for a comedian because you didn't want to leave because it was like being on a hot tub.
Right.
And you know, you have to go out into the world. But no, it was fantastic.
Well, that's why doing Sketchfest is. I mean, and I've done maybe like 12 of the last 13 or something like that.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah.
It's just such an incredible place to do comedy.
The audiences are fantastic.
It's a great city. I love everything.
How do you continue to grow Sketchfest every year?
I don't know that we've grown it because we already have like over 200 shows and the festival's, you know, almost three full weeks long. I feel like we've sort of reached at this point we've sort of capped out to kind of the amount of shows that we do, but you know, it's just one of those, like, it was the first lesson I learned so quickly about the sort of ripple effect of show business, which is that if you have one great person that a bunch of people really like and you can get them to come there and then they say nice things about it, you have exponential reach that you wouldn't have had otherwise because it's such a small community. So, you know, when we started having people like the Fred Willards of the world and you know, the Upright Citizens Brigade and names of people recognized, then everybody around them when we would go the next time around the next year and say, hey, you know, we would really love to have you. We've had these people. And then they could, it just, they did the work for us in a lot of ways. I mean, we had to make sure people have a good time when they come, but you know, other people create our reputation for us in the sense.
Yeah. But you still have to run the festival well.
Yeah,
it is a remarkable, cause I remember the first time I did it was in 2005 and we'd only been dating a couple of months. And
wait a minute, we were dating in 2005.
Don't worry
about it, Dana. I told you.
Water!
Now who was dating?
We are show business husband and wife. We've determined that we are really show business husband and wife.
That was very scary. Because I was also not looking at you.
I know, no.
That was very organic.
That was very organic. we're not computers, Chris. We're physical.
but at the time, you'd only been doing the festival for a couple of years, and you put Mike Furman and I with Bruce McCullough on a show,
yeah.
And I was like, it fucking blew my mind.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind that you guys, you know, you and Cole and Dave were just like, hey, why don't we just make a thing for our, and it's mainly for our friends, but we'll just get some other people to come in and like make it official.
Yeah, and hats off too, because it's just people probably do understand it's an unfeasible amount of work, just logistically.
I saw Janet have many breakdowns over the years, but the breakdowns lasted less time each year.
Yeah,
until I think maybe like five years ago. You're like, well, yeah, no, we actually hired people because you guys just used to do fucking everything.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, and I would imagine also the unfortunate side of that is seeing the business side of comedians that you respect. And you're like, this person I liked is actually not the best person to work with.
We've had that with just the way people treat other people too. Just like they seem great and then they get to the festival. It's so rare, but on the rare occasion that happens and then somebody is like really mean to our drivers or someone they think they can get away with not being nice to, like it's not going to get back to you. It's crushing. I'm very glad that's rare, but it does occasionally happen and you're like, no.
Not you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I saw a comedian that I really respected just chewing somebody out at a different thing, and I was like, "Oh no,
yeah,
not you,
yeah. Oh, not double plus ungood.
Well, yeah. The upside to that is that it makes you very aware.
It was
aware.
Marty Allen.
Oh, my God.
Hello there.
And then he yelled at her.
You call this a tuna? but it also makes you very aware of how you behave. You know, like when you see people misbehaving, because it, you know,
for sure.
It just makes you more like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not going to be. Because when you, in the last handful of years, you, Janet, are now like, Cora is a real, that is iconic. And, you know, people need to, I think when people find out that you're a very sweet, compassionate human being, they need to know that when they are attached to a show like that. Because if you were a dick, it would literally destroy some of their
absolutely,
worlds.
Absolutely. I'm not answering for you, but
please.
It's well, go ahead.
Well, no, I wasn't.
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember once being with George Carlin, who I mentioned earlier, and we were talking, and somebody just came up and interrupted us both to say something about George. And like, just basically, like, hey, anyway.
Yeah.
And it was pretty rude and forward. And he was incredibly gracious and solicitous and gave them everything they wanted. And then they walked away, and he just goes, you got to remember that moment's not about you, it's about them.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, he was the greatest. He was the greatest.
I really like Kelly too. That book she wrote was wonderful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
What were you going to say about the Coraverse?
What was I going to say something? No, I don't know. I mean, I think that's true, especially people who do, you know, who do conventions, and then you're like, wait, I don't think you like people that much. Why are you like signing an autograph and potentially ruining someone's day by not being awesome because you want money, which happens sometimes with people, celebrities who do signings.
I would say it happens a lot of the time.
Where you're like, maybe just, there's got to be another way for you to make some cash, because you've just crushed the dreams of this person who was like, I've loved you forever.
And who probably paid for that too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh, totally paid for it.
Yeah,
because that's the reason the person's there. Like the celebrity's there. It's clear that they are only there for that reason. Then you're like, that's not a good enough reason. Like,
I think one of the biggest curses in entertainment is if you hate your audience.
Yeah.
You know, like if you don't have the gift of having an audience of people that you like, yeah, you probably hang out with them, you know, then that's a huge bummer, because because then the audience gets shortchanged, and then you're never satisfied. That person's never satisfied.
Totally.
I always think how lucky I am that when people come up to me, I go, oh, that's probably someone I would have hung out with.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you know?
and true. And there's also just I'm really fascinated by these personalities of like Jerry Lewis, who was so in desperate, Jurassic need of attention and approval, and was such a cock to people.
It's a terrible. Yeah, it's a really dangerous combination.
It's such a grill. Somebody I know walked up to Chrissy Hines once and said, "Excuse me," and she just turned and said, "Fuck off."
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And it wasn't even like at an airport. Like, it was at a show. They were backstage. And I think it was just like, I need to get through here.
Oh.
Fuck her.
Oh,
that's
damn.
Rock and roll, Dana. That's just rock and roll.
That's how it works, man. Yeah. That's just how it works.
That's her way of saying, I love you.
I guess.
But I think it's.
Well, then I know a lot of women.
I love you over the years.
You're doing great, buddy.
Turns out I'm a Lothario.
You're doing really, really great.
But, you know, when people sort of carry a different era into a new era,
that's also very, it can very be true.
Because I'm sure, you know, well, and I'm not defending, you know.
No, in the late 70s, at the height of punk and new wave, that was like, well,
but also I mean with Jerry Lewis, who, like, there was a period of time where celebrities were very much not in the,
yes,
did right. not have to deal
yeah,
with
yeah.
the right. peeps
yeah.
in any way, and didn't have to respect them, didn't have to have a conversation with them, mm-hmm. just, I do my thing, this is my job, don't fucking, you know,
yeah.
and got away with it. And also, you know, at a time when there was less therapy and more pills, You know, I would imagine people weren't really dealing.
I don't think Jerry ever took pills, Chris.
What? you know, people just weren't really dealing with whatever kind of mental.
Yeah.
The types of mental illness and issues that we all go, well, we got to talk to a therapist. Like, we all have problems. We all got to talk to a therapist. Back then, it was just like, walk it off, you know?
Yeah.
And then just never dealt with anything. And that was just part of their culture. And then it just kind of solidified in their bones.
Yeah. He's a specific case of just, like, it's like the worst aspects of both worlds, like the narcissism and the need, the naked emotional need and narcissism of a comedian, and then the emotional austerity and haughtiness of like a tortured celebrity. And it's like, actually, you need neither one of these. You can take both of these down about 100% and you'd be fine. It is fascinating. I'm fascinated by those guys, those old, you know, Johnny Lydon, another guy just despises his audience.
But that you buy into.
Yeah, it's a shtick.
It's a shtick. And it's like, you know, you're almost like, he spit on me, you know, like in that case. That's where you kind of go, oh, it's fun. He did it.
Yeah. Like, are there people that you are a fan of that you would shy away from meeting?
I love your Tom York story. Speaking of like things anytime anyone brings up Radiohead or I always hear your voice
still
saying,
love them.
This interview is over.
I was working at K-Rock in the 90s and right after Creep came out and they blew up. And at the time, I don't think anyone really expected they were going to be more than like that song.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they're one of the most progressive, innovative bands in music. But at the time, there was an Acoustic Christmas and I was supposed to interview... That's the dishwasher. Katie, could you just go just open the dishwasher so that it stops beeping? So at the time, it's a very professional setup here.
Yes.
At Hardwick House.
Can't you just tell R2 to stop beating?
R2's jerking off to a tuna sandwich.
There you go. Keep the illusion. Keep up the illusion. Right.
But so I was backstage at Acoustic Christmas. Yeah. Oh my.
WD40. I wrote the WD-40 song. Some guy says that.
That's great. So we're backstage at Acoustic Christmas. It's 1994. I walk backstage and someone goes, hey, do you want to interview Radiohead? I was working at K-Rock at the time. I was a DJ.
I remember.
And I go, sure. And they go, great. Jed the Fish was supposed to do it, but he had to go somewhere else. I don't know what happened. I don't know what they were upset about. I don't know if they felt blown off by Jed the Fish or what had transpired up to that point. But I walked in and all I said to them was, hi, I'm Chris. Nice to meet you. And Tom York stood up and goes, this interview's over. And he just stormed out.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Nothing. Yeah. I ran into him later that night and I was like, I don't know what happened, but I'm really sorry. And he just wouldn't even talk to me. So I was part of whatever the problem was. And maybe he hated Singled Out. I don't know what his problem was. But
hated Singled Out.
Might have hated Singled Out. But that's my like meaning of the celebrity story. But I was always, Steve Martin was the guy I was really terrified to meet. But then I met him and he was lovely.
He's lovely, yeah.
And so that took that away. So I think really Bill Murray's probably the last one. Met him at a golf course when I was in college. I was working there, and I would be leery about meeting him. He was friendly, but I don't know what he's like now.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's like now.
I think
he's great when he feels like being great.
Yeah, he's great when he feels like being great. Yeah.
And if not, I think there's a guy that really suffers zero consequences for anything that he says or does, and so it doesn't. I almost don't even blame him. I'm like, well, he doesn't. He's not tethered to anything.
Yeah.
So there's no. He's mythological. He could just appear.
Like, it's like. I met Paul McCartney and I was like, you don't even know what reality's like.
Did you say that to him?
No, but I just asked him if I killed him, if I would become him.
I think that's the math on that checks out.
Well, we had him on the podcast. He was lovely.
He's incredibly gracious.
And he even sort of acknowledged the fact that he referred to the other guy on stage of himself being like, oh, when the other guy is on stage.
Right. Yeah.
But in life, he seems very, you know, he's like, yeah, I kind of don't. When people want to take pictures, I'd rather they just say, hey, hello. Can we just have a quick little conversation?
Yeah.
You know, like he really just and it was also interesting that he of all the people that come on and like bring publicists or studio people or whatever. Yeah.
It was just him in his fucking office. And I was like, well, Paul McCartney didn't need 9 publicists.
Yeah, I know. Why do you
third lead on a sci-fi show? Yeah. You know?
No, that's a really good... That's the whole point.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. No, but like, again, in terms of seeing, getting the opportunity to see how other people behave and how other people work and sort of going, you know, that seems classy. Can I also be really classy?
I like the sort of tone of this conversation now, which is about fandom, because you are a part of Korra, which is an insane fandom, and you are a part of a lot of different fandoms that are then...
micro fandoms.
That are then re-expressed in a show like Stand Against Evil. And so, I mean, do you think fandom's in a good place at the moment in terms of, you know, because fans have so much... ostensibly so much control over
access
and control. Do you think that's good? Like, more access is great. Why wouldn't it be? Or do you think that the, you know, just a small handful of people kind of abuse that and ruin it for everyone?
I think a small handful of people do abuse it. I don't know that they ruin it for everyone. I've also been really lucky because the kind of shows I've done that have great fan bases, that have like incredibly respectful, warm, kind, like non-invasive, I don't ever get trolled. Like, I just don't have those sorts of experiences. So I feel great about the access. I feel like we do still have like a certain, I mean, there's still a choice in how engaged to be or not to be. But I'm sure that that's not true for everyone. I mean, I also feel like there, it maybe depends on, you know, I'm also not, like, I don't engage on social media. Like, I've chosen how much or how little I feel comfortable with.
Yeah, I rarely respond to people on social media. Like, I don't, like, go seek out, you know, friendships and things on Twitter. I have friends. If I have any fandom at all, it's because of my stand-up. And I think because the nature of my act is pretty personal and revealing, that people sometimes feel like they're closer to you than they actually are. And so I have, like Night of the Living Dead, I have a small but dedicated group of followers. and also because of a podcast, which all three of us can speak to, you have a weird intimacy with people because they spend a lot of time alone with you. Yeah. They're in their car with you and they're going to work with you.
But also a lot of people, it's headphones.
Yeah.
And so you're very... And with podcasts that I listen to, you're literally putting it in your body. Like, it's very intimate, and you
have to be really respectful of that. If I met Karina Longworth, I would be like, blah, blah, but I have to remember, she doesn't know you.
Right.
You know her. She doesn't know you.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the key thing.
But you in particular deal with a lot of different fandoms because you're involved with Lucha Vavoom, which is a whole separate fandom as well. Are there through lines? Are there things that you think kind of connect all of the fandoms, consistencies?
Well, for my case, I've finally gotten like a connective tissue in that, like, it's the adult monster kids.
Uh-huh.
Like the show Stan and my podcast. And I've kind of like what I really like in my life is sort of finally bubbled up into my sort of public work. It's a micro version of what you experience. Like, all the people that come up to me that like really know what I do, I'm like, oh, I totally hang out with you. Totally hang out with you. It'd be great.
I remember like one of the first times I saw you do stand up. It was during the comedy boom. It might have been the late 80s on something.
Sounds like me.
What was so interesting about it was that
a lot of my earlier life has been colorized by Ted Turner.
You had that little widow's peak and lived in that old house with the Frankenstein monster dad. But it was coming out of the 80s boom, and so you a lot of your comedy was almost a satire of an 80s comic.
Yeah, it was.
But all of the things you were saying were deeply dark.
Yeah, I had a dark period.
You know, it was a lot of like, your mom's building a crucifix. If you're going to do it, we might as well do it the right way.
Yeah,
you know?
It was very pop accessible stories of terrible depression and
dysfunction. I mean, like, almost in the sense that if Bill Hicks had more had like a friendly like he would yeah. drift into that sometimes too, like a he little would. Bit of the hey, isn't that fun, you know, like
he would. And I've always liked that as a, especially in music, like I love a song like Girlfriend in a Coma, which is a beautiful pop song, and then you listen to what they're actually singing and it's yeah. really dark, and so dark it's funny.
Yeah.
A jam song like Welcome to Milton Keynes, which is a just beautiful pop song about people that are so fucking poor.
Right.
And I love that. I think that's a great way to put stuff across. And that was very intentional. That was why I never, like, although I love punk and I go to punk shows, I never looked like a punk because I always thought it was better to deliver it, it's better to get that message from a very socially acceptable vessel.
Right.
And Bill just he had a very cherubic look. He was just a naturally cherubic fella.
Yeah.
Then you know, I think Dennis Leary had more success doing that kind of stuff because he looked like people. He looked like what people wanted to get that message from.
Well, he kind of did the cartoon of the, with the yeah, leather jacket yeah, and the smoking.
Yeah,
and
he looked like what people wanted to hear that message from.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because it was somehow not as threatening as from Bill, because Bill was real.
Well, also, Bill...
Not that Dennis isn't real. I mean, Dennis, I've known Dennis forever. He's Dennis. He's a real guy.
But Dennis, you know? But Dennis's material was a lot about himself.
It was more affect.
It was more also about himself. And yes. Like, yeah, I'm a smoker, you know.
Right.
And Bill Hicks was a lot of his stuff, which is stunning to me that he was touring and basically just touring going, you're all fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here's why you're fucking stupid.
He said,
and so, and that can be, you know, that can be very, an audience doesn't always, I mean, it's funny when you hear about it or when you see it, but probably not super fun for some of the audience
yeah, one
at
of the
show.
We walked around Disney World one day, and that was one of the most surreal experiences of my life.
You walked around Disney World with Bill Hicks?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Wow.
We were both in Orlando at the same time. Like, what do you want to do? I don't know. Should we go to Disney World? I guess. There's nothing else
to do. The way all people should experience
it. Yeah, there's nothing else to do. And he said, and he had that issue, and he said, he would say this on stage, but he also said it and meant it. He's like, you know, shit, man, I can't sell out Caroline's on a Saturday night, and they're dredging Lake Erie to put in bleacher seats for Carrot Top.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's just however you choose to deliver, you know, that stuff. But I think people like Bill or people like the Smiths or whoever, Radiohead, like if you have a dark message that maybe will limit your mass popularity, your audience will be that much more dedicated. I've been doing comedy 735 years.
Wow,
and I'm still in the clubs, you know. I'm going to Zany's this weekend in Chicago, which is a lot more uplifting than the old club in Chicago, Morosa's.
Totally different.
But you know, I don't do theaters. I still do three nights in a club, but I have people that have been coming to see me since the mid 90s.
Oh wow.
You know?
I think clubs are
they're longer.
They are,
they're
but
2 days longer.
They are, but I, my last tour, I did a theater tour, and now I'm doing clubs because I really need the material.
Yeah.
And you just need to perform a lot. And I love it because you can't.
Theater's really hard.
There's an, you know, a theater is very presentational, but
yes.
A club is so intimate and you can talk to the audience and fuck around with them.
Theater's a performance, a club is a conversation.
Yeah.
And you don't have the 2 second delay that really still throws me off after mm-hmm. doing it all these years.
Sure. Just letting it hit the back of the room.
Yeah.
Are you performing? Are you doing stuff with any groups, any sketch groups?
Yeah, I mean, I always end up doing more shows than I probably should at Sketchfest.
You do more of everything than you should.
we'll do stuff. I'll do stuff with like the Thrilling Adventure, Work Juice World.
Did you do Plan 9 yet?
We did Plan 9 last night.
Yeah, we did Plan 9 last night
at Largo.
Yeah,
it's so fun.
You should do it next time.
I'll do it.
It's so
great. There's really, for those of you who don't know, we do a Janet and I and our friends do a live stage reading of Plan 9 from Outer Space. We don't color we don't add. We just read the script. And there's there's yet to be another script that we have found that does what that script does. That
well, you're being modest because you wrote stage directions. Yeah, there's a narration. There's a narrative thread that Dana wrote that is read throughout. That is providing commentary, funny, yeah. And it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And it just ties the whole thing together in this very meta way.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever done a show where you never stop laughing. The audience never stops laughing, and they come up afterwards and are like, "My face hurts." I know that's a cliche that it's almost really never actually happens, but my face hurts.
It is. And it's, you know, God bless Ed Wood. That movie is, that story is so inept and it's so sincere.
Yeah.
It just oozes. And it's so funny all the way through, and we do that. And we're trying to find another script to do to sort of broaden our repertoire.
But it's hard to, like, that's a difficult balance to find.
Yeah, we're kind of like, should we just do something totally different, you know, just to not
the daring Dobermans.
You know, you should do it one time. You should do one and just have Jonah sit in the front row with a couple of robots.
Yeah.
And then just
Jonah does Jeff Trent. He played the lead in Plan 9 last night.
Yeah.
And he does an amazing
voice. I don't understand.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
God, he did it. So good.
That's a legendary character on the Nerdist podcast because he, probably 5 or 6 years ago, we were talking about, he was like, "Oh, there's always like a guy in those 80s movies where there's like Coke, there's like a Coke cartel." Uh-huh. And there's always one guy who's just, it says, "Where's the guy?" "It's in the back." Like, it's just like, there's always a guy that says the thing is in the back.
"It's in the back."
And we named that character Bruce Gutter.
Bruce Gutter.
And he would recur from time to time. "It's in the back."
God.
Yeah.
It's
but
so
Jonah's,
good.
It's perfect. Yeah.
So absolutely good. Perfect.
The guy in Plan 9 is an actor named Gregory Walcott, who actually had a pretty good career. If you looked him up online, you go, "Oh, yeah, I've seen that guy. He's in Sugarland Express." And, you know, and he's in Ed Wood, too. And he has this great iconic line in Ed Wood, where he goes, "What role does Vampira play?" And it's just like, "Oh, that's Gregory Walker. She's standing right over there."
Cut. We got it.
Yeah,
just one
thank
take.
You. One take.
That's all you want.
That's all.
It's almost Gregory Peck.
It's almost Gregory Peck.
Yeah. Almost Gregory Peck.
We used to do a room bit in The Simpsons of Gregory Peck auditioning for multiple Megs in Silence of the Lambs. "We don't really want to star in the..."
"Please, I'd like to read it."
"Well, we don't want to star in..."
"Please, can I just audition? I think I've earned the right to audition."
"All right, Mr. Peck."
"I can smell your cunt."
"Okay, thank you, Mr. Peck.
Please, can I just have one more?" "No. Let me just take another crack at it."
"When do I throw my jizz?"
I can smell your..." "No.
Mr.
No.
Peck, that's a different character. You will never throw your jizz.
You
Mr.
don't
Peck,
need
you
to,
never throw your
that
jizz.
That was flipper.
I've already prepared it."
No.
"I just went to Arthur Treacher's and got 2 packs of tartar sauce. I was ready to give you as many takes as you need."
"You're going to use your tartar sauce?" "Just no, it gets me off."
"No, it turns me on. Of course, what do you think?"
"When Dick Siemens told me he was going to start making tartar sauce, I said, that sounds like a bad idea."
"He's my investment broker."
"I love whale pussy."
Just bringing it back around. Just bringing it back
around.
Gotta
bring it all the way around.
Just bring it all the way around.
Got to.
What sort of comedy stuff are you planning for Sketchfest this year? Could you say anything yet?
Well, no. I mean, we
fuck.
Yeah, sorry. We release a lineup kind of all together in a couple weeks.
Jesus.
This is very south.
And how many?
Fuck.
But how many shows do you have?
It'll be over 200.
Over 200. Sure. And how many comedians do you book?
Well, the people that we fly in and house, it is like 300 to 400.
Wow.
And then
God
there will be, you know, another 800 of kind of up-and-comers that will get themselves there to showcase, that we'll put, you know, on shows for people.
How do you make money?
I mean, it's not much. But
we
love
money.
Doing it.
No, it's like Plan 9. It's like everybody gets a little bit of money and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
But you can't not do it. I mean, it's a fucking institution.
It.
And it's the best. It is the best comedy festival in the country by a long shot.
No, it means a lot when you say that. That's really nice.
And, you know, the best thing about, like, for people, like, in the business, the three things that we're talking about, like Sketchfest, this podcast, Stand Against Evil, every one of them was just something that we started.
Just because you're like, I want to do something for myself.
I was writing on a sitcom to make money because I was getting divorced and I needed money. And I was writing on a show that I wasn't well suited to write for, and I basically spent a lot of my time in my office with the door shut. And I just thought, I'm just going to write something that I can make digitally and make it 7 minutes long. And I wrote this stupid thing about my dad fighting monsters, and I was going to play my dad. And just do it for fun to make it work, to justify the time I was spending in this job I didn't belong in. And it ended up, for a lot of different permutations, becoming a show. Sketchfest is this thing that you started, and then it balloons into this thing. Same with The Nerdist. And it's the best advice that I tell people is things lead to things, mm-hmm. period. And Francis Ford Coppola said once, if you start at one end of town with a bass drum and you walk down the middle of the street, by the time you get to the other end of town, you will have a parade behind you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really like people, you want to do something, you want to be a writer? Great. Start writing. You want to be an actor? Write something and act in it. You want to be a producer? Produce something and act in it. Right.
Gregory Peck once said, please, I worked on this at home. Please. Let me just audition for it. Please.
If I can play Atticus Finch, I think I can play multiple Megs. I also would like to play the guy in Escape from New York who has Donald Pleasant's finger.
Well, they already made that movie, Mr. Peck.
Please.
Make it.
If you try to rescue him, he dies.
Yes, we've seen the movie.
Please, I'm auditioning.
You're auditioning for a movie that's been made.
Trying to get someone to listen to him. He's just, please.
I would like to play Quint.
That movie has been made. It's in theaters.
Look at your hands. You have city hands.
Yes,
been
it's counting great. Money. It's great.
Been counting money all your life.
I just am here to take your order. I can't actually.
When do we film? I can't do that.
He storms out.
Where are you with JV Club Podcast?
260-ish.
That's crazy.
262, something like that. I love it. It's been so fun. It's been, again, it's another thing that, you know, I was like, I'd like to have a podcast. And we were together at the time, and you're like, you should have a podcast. And I was like, I don't know. What am I going to bring to the table that isn't, you know, really, that's the other thing, right? You get bogged down in this idea of spending so much time looking around you that you're like, well, whatever I'm going to do, it's probably already out there. Or, you know, why would I do it well if somebody else is, you know, and just to go like, well, we'll just find the thing. You gave me such great advice. You were just, you know, you're like, you'll know. But actually really think about it and think about a thing that will be fun to you that you won't get tired of doing that maybe isn't out there. There's going to be some version because it's going to be you. It's not going to be anybody else, you know, and like own that. And that absolutely was great advice. You know?
I'm so glad to hear that because it really is. You always forget that you are because you don't have the proper perspective on yourself that the whole collection of cells and everything that you are is what the special packages because no one else has that collection of experiences and cells and everything. And so so it's easy. And it's the same with stand up too, where you go, my life isn't that interesting. Like, well, just be yourself, like be as much yourself as possible. Cause the more yourself you are, the less like anyone else you are.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, wow.
And that's the,
look at you. You buried that little, pearl right in the back.
Just right in the middle there. But you're doing a hand gesture. Like it's a fingering thing.
You buried that beautiful little pearl necklace right in there. Yeah. You just buried it right in there.
Look at right in there. Look at you just right in there. And you're coming around the back.
As meaningful as it was. I stop punching that person.
But but you've done such a great job, Barnes, and I'm so proud of how it's exciting because when you know, I always knew that you're like one of the funniest people I have ever met, but it's been so fun over the years to just see how much you've worked and to see other people discover that. That's so much. It's been so much fun.
Oh, that's great. You know, I feel really lucky and inspired to be around, you know, such an amazing community of people, and like to feel that was one of the main things that like Dana and Jimmy Pardo and Paul F were, you know, I didn't like stand-up. I only kind of liked a little bit of stand-up when I moved here. And that was after I even had a comedy festival. It just wasn't necessarily my thing.
We don't
and
like
David
it either.
Cross, yeah, but you know what I mean? I had an association with it that just, it didn't feel me because I was so into sketch and improv and stuff. And to be like on that stage last night, I don't take that for granted for a second. To be like, oh, I was invited to be a part of this thing that Lorraine Newman and Brian Posehn and Jonah Ray and Paul F. Tompkins
Bronger,
and yeah, to feel like you have a place in that community. That's like the best feeling in the world. It really is. Yeah.
Well, people just also should really understand, because I remember when we started dating, I had just gotten sober and you had just moved to LA.
Oh yeah.
And so we were both just dealing with stuff. Uh-huh. And
he was Mr. and Mrs. Raw.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. We were just raw. Yeah.
That's where the passion was.
That's right.
Man.
That's right.
But also just for it's always
such a good
lesson for anyone, because when you came to LA, you just felt like, I got nothing, and no one is going to give a shit, and I got nothing to show people, and I don't care. And, you know, even as convinced as you were at the time that you weren't going to figure it out, you figured it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it was, if you could go back and tell that young woman something, what would you say?
I mean, I think it's a total cliche. It's the whole get out of your own way kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you just don't spend time worrying that the future is going to look a way that you don't want it to, because that's a complete and total waste of energy.
And do everything. I've talked to people who have like open micers that don't want to do something because they feel it might be off brand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what are you doing? Just fucking, you know, my nephew is 18 and he just started college at UT, and he was like, I want to do comedy. And I go, great. And he goes, could I perform at ID10T Festival this year? And I go, yeah, but you got to get on stage.
Yeah.
And so I've been sending him notebooks and like giving him tips. And I love it because he's so voraciously consuming it. And I said, when I was in college, and I knew you when I was in college, we had a comedy group that would meet once a week and help each other write material. It's where I met Mike Furman and people like Steve Callahan. And, we would run into you occasionally. And he was like, well, I want to start. So I told him what we did and how we ran it. And I say the same, the advice that I was given when I started, I go, but no matter, because he texts me every once in a while, he goes, I'm having a hard time trying to understand how an audience is going to respond to someone. I go, well, you haven't been in front of an audience yet.
Yeah, just do it.
So I go, you have to get on stage 100 times.
Yeah.
And you'll know.
It's just like parachuting or scuba. You know how you learn how to do it? By doing it.
But
the other way does not exist.
I am so excited for him to just, because he's so excited about it.
Yeah.
And watching him kind of begin that journey is really, really fun. Because it is. It's heartbreaking, but fun and exciting and nerve-wracking and all of those things.
That must be hard, too, to be able to, you know, you have to let them go do it and know that, you're going to have really great sets, and then you're going to have sets where you just wish you were dead.
I told him that. I was like, but if in your mind, as much as you're beating yourself up in the car afterwards, if you go, but I got to get up tomorrow night.
Yeah, you got to do it again tomorrow night.
Then you know you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. I always imagine this, apparently the story of, this may be apocryphal, but Jacob Dylan, Bob Dylan's son, said like, hey, I'm thinking of starting a band. And his dad invited, well, let's go down to the boxing gym. Let's
right.
And it was just like, so I'm being a band, huh? Yeah, I think I can do what you do. Okay.
I hope his father gave him even that much attention.
I think he did.
I hope so.
I think he did. All of his kids seem pretty well-adjusted folks.
Yeah, I never met Jacob when I worked at K-Rock, and that's when the Wallflowers like really were cranking. But he seemed like a sweet guy.
My friend sat next to Bob at Jesse's wedding. And he's a TV writer, and he said to Bob, he goes, Bob, you must be very proud and happy. Your sons are great. Everybody loves them. They're really terrific people. And Bob doesn't want to. He goes, what do you do? He goes, I'm a TV writer. He goes, what do you write on? He goes, well, right now I'm writing a show called Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And Bob clearly didn't know what to say. He goes, oh, yeah, that's a good show. He goes, that's on all the time.
And then Bob Hill started going, now this is a story all about how my left got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute and I'll tell you how I became the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
It'd be great if you started with hip hop, hippity hop.
Hippity hop, hop the heavy, you don't stop to jam, damn the boogie.
I think rap should still start with, my name is Bob, and I'm here to say.
I'm going to expand your mind in a remarkable way.
But I love that. Santa Rita. That's a good show.
It's a good show.
It's on all the time.
That's really sweet.
That's the mark of a good show. You know.
Let's put this on all the time.
Undeniable.
Let's just run it constantly.
So Stand Against Evil is this will air, but this will go up by the time Stand starts November 1st.
Yeah, and it's on every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock on IFC.
Season two,
yeah.
It's very happy. Janet and John McGinley fighting evil.
Fighting demons.
Fighting demons.
And it's not CG, it's dudes in suits.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
We got a dude on stilts wearing a dress over him, spitting vines at people.
I want to hear how the sauce is made.
How do we get back to dolphins?
Thank you.
So they got the cloaca. Is that it? Is that how it works?
Cut my fin. Say my name. Flipper. That's it, bitch. Say my name. Flipper. Look, it's all over you now. Can I put my bottle nose in your butt just for like a minute? Yeah, wash, but you'll never be clean. You can shower, but you'll always stick like fish.
Oh, Flipper, when did you become evil?
Evil Flipper! There's your show! Yeah. Evil Flipper!
Yeah, it's a great idea. What are you working on, like, 9 things right now besides Sketchfest?
I'm doing like an IFC streaming thing that I am writing now that I have to somehow shoot after Sketchfest. And then, we have this, and then I think You're the Worst is still on. It hasn't finished its season yet, but it's gotta be close. And the podcast and
JV Club.
Yeah. Those are the main things.
And Dana, your special, Mr. Funny Man, is...
It's just an album, and it's available on iTunes.
I would call that special.
And Amazon. It's available on Amazon and iTunes.
It is.
Yeah, I didn't... it was... You know, you feel material has a... It gets ripe, mm-hmm. and then it starts to rot.
Yep.
And I was going to do a special, and quite literally the dates fell apart for production reasons. And we were getting ready to go to Atlanta and shoot. And I was like, I would have to have then stopped for 3 months and then gone back on the road and getting back in shape again.
Dana Gould, you're a victim of your own success.
I said, I don't have time. Let's just record it as an album. And it's on Kill Rock Stars. I really, because it's a punk label, which I felt very at home on. And it was great. I'm really happy, really proud of it. And I really like working with those folks.
What was your, there's a bit of yours that I think about sometimes. Well, there's a couple. The one is
many not repeatable.
living above an erotic bakery and feasting on day old chocolate cocks.
Erotic bakery named Caligula's Fist.
Yep. And then the other one is about, was a bit of, you were explaining to the audience why you adopted, because your daughters are all adopted.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful.
Let me look at the members of my family. Religious weirdo, gun nut, biker, boozer, dead tooth, too many cats, the guy who talks to his truck. Maybe I adopted because genetically my balls are full of poison.
Weirdly, I remember you coming home from the improv and telling me about that bit.
There wasn't the improv. I did see that at the improv.
That's funny. Yeah.
That's...
You were like, oh my God, Dana Gould said the greatest thing tonight.
About his balls.
So I was like, goodbye. Well,
you're one of
the
people that made me feel like it was okay to, that there are ways to express eloquent filth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I always felt bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm just doing George Carlin. I'm not even pretending to be original about it.
Oh, and then there's a thing you said at Largo once. I don't want to say who you were referring to, but there was another comedian that you referred to as not being funny. And you go, so-and-so is about as funny as coming home from a dead baby's funeral and seeing its toy box in the living room. That one was like a fucking sucker punch. And like that laughs from the Largo audience that night were like, ah!
And,
like,
that,
like
and that's
a rush of,
that's a quote of my father's. That's
oh
that's
my God, that's Stan, gotta, you gotta write it into the show.
Stan is my dad, and my dad would say, that guy's about as funny as a dead baby's toy box. He once said
one
time we were looking, I was just, my dad's 87, you know, and we were just sitting in the kitchen looking at the Us magazine, and there was a woman that was married to a little person. And my dad just looked at it and he goes, look at that asshole. Toe to toe, his nose is in it, and nose to nose, his toes is in it.
Jesus Christ. Your dad said that?
And I said, did you, is that yours? He goes, well, I just said it. What?
Son, I'm a monster. What don't you understand?
I'm a horrible person. Yeah, most of the funny "don't crap an apple" is something my dad said. Like a lot of Stanisms is just stuff I hear my dad say.
Jesus, yeah, man, right? And does he have any idea?
Not even a little.
Damn,
not even a little.
That's
nope.
Sad but freeing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, sad but freeing. Well put.
Well, I'm glad you guys were here. Thanks for doing the show together.
Thanks for having us. Congratulations. This is really fun.
Congratulations on another season. Being Evie Barrett, and I hope to. But I got to get you back on. I got to get you back on like one on one too, because you've never done the podcast one on one.
No,
which is a crime.
It's a totally different situation. It's a totally different experience. It's very painful. It's you're very aggressive. Confrontational.
You're on the Goldfinger table, and the laser is moving slowly up between your legs.
Miss Varney,
bring it. Bring it.
Lovely to see you, Ms. Varney.
Lovely to see you.
But it's great. And you know, you're one of my favorite people, so I'm glad we're still friends.
Even after
all these years. And Dana, you very much inspired me as a comic from the earliest day. Because I'm so very old.
Puppetycorn.
My grandkids.
Puppetycorns.
I watched you when I was four.
Exactly. No. Chris used to come and see my two-reelers at the Cinematograph.
He used to watch when I did the show with the display ape. They just would display an ape. People would look at it.
Of course, back then, many people still had prehensile tails, and they'd flop out the back of their trousers. Of course, they weren't called trousers back then.
No. They were called knee curtains.
They were called leg shirts.
They were leg shirts, and then, because we were also simians, we'd jerk off with their feet. Yeah.
Syngenthropus man would come over.
That, of course, was Australopithecus afarensis, you understand?
Of course, back then, dick pics, you had to carve it into a stone and roll it down to the village down the hill.
We called them dick logs. You had to carve out.
And that's how you get the name Dick Boulder, a good friend of mine.
Yeah, just in case you want it. And that's how the last name of Smith came to be.
Full circle.
Water.
Water.
Enjoy your burrito. Okay, I know I just said enjoy your burrito, suggesting the end of the podcast, but it is a lie, because now I present to you the song that we referenced in the podcast, Fempire, featuring Janet Varney on bass and vocals, and Kit Pongetti on guitar and vocals, produced by Mike Furman around 2005 in Los Angeles. Here's Me and My Vagina on the Nerdist Podcast. Katie, play the thing.
Nothing that a woman cannot do. My roar's like thunder at your door, sir. And my X chromosome is too loud to ignore. Yeah, my shit don't smell like roses.
I'm not an angel in disguise.
I don't always say I love you
when your members tween my thighs.
Our love can never be harmonious.
Your logic's too testosterone
to understand my estrogenerosity.
Senorita Jane Goodall went to live with the monkeys, cause she couldn't stand to be around men.
And Miss Harriet Tubman did not need her no loving as conductor of that underground train.
Amelia Earhart was frantic, so she crossed the Atlantic to prove that we don't need a dick to fly.
With my two tits as my witness, it's clitoris-y business to be in the labia majority. So deal with me and my steaming cup of femininity.
Don't burn your tongue,
cause me and my vagina are coming up behind you, and my velvet lock don't need your wooden key.
I am all powerful compared to you.
Some things that a woman should not do.
Your dirty dishes,
well, that's a start. Pick up the pieces of your shattered little heart.
Or be an architect,
oh, that's too much math.
And strike accountant off that list, don't feel my wrath.
Women are terrible with money,
even worse, they're just not funny.
We lack the balls and muscle mass for the Marines.
And
just forget the presidency.
Cause we show too much clemency.
Ask a woman if you don't know what that means. So deal with me and my steaming cup of femininity.
Don't burn your tongue, cause
me and my vagina are coming up behind you, and my velvet lock don't need your wooden key.
Ow!
So deal with me and my steaming cup of femininity.
Don't burn your tongue.
Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.